The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, episode number 597 for Monday, March 21st, 2016. Folks, and welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, the show where you send in questions, tips, and cool stuff found. We share your tips, we share your cool stuff found, we answer your questions. As a community, we all come together to try and increase our collective knowledge with the goal of each of us learning at least three new things every time we get together. That's three right there. This episode has three sponsors. Three is the magic number. ProXPN at proxpn.com/MacGeekGab offers you a free VPN. And if you need more bandwidth than the free one provides, coupon code GAB50 will get you 50% off. We'll talk more about that shortly here. Otherworld Computing at MacSales.com, one of our favorite places for upgrades. We'll talk more about that. And of course, BB Edit from Barebones Software. We will talk more about that too here in Durham, New Hampshire. With whatever voice I seem to have left for the day, all for you, I'm Dave Hamilton.
And here in previously snowy, but not anymore, it's all gone, in Fairfield, Connecticut, this is John F. Braun.
How goes it, John F. Braun?
Good. I got all sorts of new things in my life here, but maybe we should maybe defer those
and okay.
Talk about the new thing that happened today is that I believe that our friends at Apple had their very last event. Tim and company had their very last event at what is called Town Hall and introduced a few new things. Nothing earth shattering, in my humble opinion, but
no, I don't think it was earth shattering. It's interesting, I guess. So I want to address that point because that was something that they said at the end of it and probably was the reason for the name of the event. Right. Let us loop you in. It was the final event that they plan to have anyway at Infinite Loop. So there will most likely be another announcement in June, but that would be at WWDC. So that'll happen at the Moscone in San Francisco. And then again, most likely an event or two in the fall if they follow their own schedule. But those typically also happen either in downtown San Francisco near the Moscone Center, but typically not at it, or in San Jose. The theater at Apple's campus in Cupertino is tiny. I mean, if it holds 200 people, I'd be surprised. I think, I mean, it's really small. So yeah, this would be it for them.
Yeah, I did like some of the things they did at the beginning. So one I did notice, I think this is the first time they did this. So they were using Beats One to feed in the music. I noticed that,
and makes sense.
You know, rather than the you know, that disaster they had with the TV van that one time. So that was interesting. That's the first time I think they ever did that.
It is. Yep.
I got to hear Beats One because I don't subscribe to it or anything.
Oh, right.
I did like the 40 Years and 40 Seconds video. That was a very nice tribute. The chuckle I got out of it was at one point they showed something referring to the Newton and then they scribbled it out.
Yeah. I also noticed that the rainbow pinwheel, spiraling pinwheel of death was given about a second. So if you extrapolate that out, I think that's about right, because we've all probably seen that cumulatively. We each have seen that for a year of our computing lives. So that 1 second out of 40 seemed like an appropriate amount of time for the spiraling rainbow pinwheel.
Yeah, but now. It was nice that they touched on all the high points of all the things they've introduced. And then the one comment I have is that I have to give I was surprised that Tim publicly gave the FBI a smackdown. He feels very strongly about privacy and customer privacy and what the FBI is trying to do, and I think that's all I'll say about it. I understand Apple's position about overreach and you know, we'll see what happens. But again, I was surprised that he vocalized this.
I'm not surprised.
Really?
Not at all. Well, no, think about it. You know, the FBI has Apple and the FBI have worked together on many things over the years, and not one of them has ever been made public by either party. The FBI chose to make this particular request in public. Likely, my guess is because they want to have the public weigh in on this, right? It would be the only reason, and it makes sense, right? They want policy to change, and so they figured, all right, we've got this terrorist phone, and it's our best chance at swaying public opinion. But it was the FBI's choice to play this out in public. So
Apple threw down the gauntlet.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And I think we're not getting political here. We're just stating the facts of the situation. And I guess, yeah, he felt it was important enough to.
Listen, if they've got the public stage, they would be fools not to address it, especially in light of the fact that tomorrow is a fairly large hearing about this in Riverside at the courthouse there. Brian Chaffin actually is on his way there as we are speaking and recording this right now to cover that hearing, and hopefully he'll be able to get a seat inside and all that good stuff. So should be very interesting. Yeah, I thought, and then they did the FBI thing, and then they talked about the environment and health for a little while. And then in the end, kind of looking back, when the event barely reached the 1 hour mark before they ended it, I thought, man, they didn't have a whole lot to say today. They had to pad time in the beginning, it seemed like. This was a very, very short event for Apple.
Yeah, so. And there was no one more thing. But, you know, some of the things at the beginning, I thought Research Kit and Care Kit.
It's good stuff. But, you know, to spend all that time talking about the environment. Yeah, it was a lot of feel good stuff. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And then they got into, you know, some of the products, which I think are good. I'll go a bit out of order just because
I think stay out of order. That's fine. Yeah.
All right. Well, no, this is of interest to me. And I think the reason they mentioned this. So, of course, they introduced the new phone, which is kind of, I would say it's an iPhone 4, but it's an iPhone 6,
mostly.
Well, yeah, but it's the form factor of the old phone, but it's got the new, it's got the juice. It's got the right. new stuff.
Well,
it,
most of the new stuff, to my knowledge, it doesn't have 3D touch.
Right, right.
So right, that's
but it has the better processor, yes. I think the better camera, Apple Pay, and things like that.
Touch
and
ID.
Also, the price point is, you know, at a point, and the reason it's important to me is because Apple really got punished by Wall Street. And, you know, of course, for those that trade in stocks like me, I wasn't too happy with their reaction to Apple's last results. And I think they want to make a point that, okay, we're introducing a lower price point to try to regain the market share that everybody seems to be concerned about, I think was one of the takeaways that I would take from the iPhone SE. Now, I think the naming is funny because I do believe, my friend, that the Mac SE was one of the first Mac that I believe you purchased or owned. Is that correct?
I had an SE 30.
SE 30, okay, yeah, but it had an SE in it.
It did, yeah, that's true. Yeah. But that was what special edition, right? Was what SE stood for?
I think it was system expansion.
Oh, is that right?
Well, I don't know. Because it had a slot, right? I'm pretty sure the SE did have a system slot. Expansion.
Ah,
it was the deviation.
Right. It does. You're right. It stood for system expansion. So this is not system expansion. I'm actually really surprised they didn't call it the iPhone Mini, just to kind of fit in with the rest of the product line. I do want to offer a correction before we get too far away from this. You said it was the same size as the iPhone 4. That's incorrect. It's the same size as the iPhone 5 and 5S. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Smaller. Okay. But smaller than the intent was to make it smaller than the 6.
Oh yeah. No, it was to go back to that size of the phone. Yeah. And I do know a few people that would not upgrade to the 6 because they liked the size of the 5 and the 5S. I don't know. I guess this was a good move for Apple, but time will tell. It seems a little odd to me now to have, you know, three sizes of phone, but maybe, I don't know, maybe it's not that odd. It seems tough for developers, but maybe I'm overstating that.
Yeah, and the pricing, $399 retail.
Yeah.
I don't know if a 16 gig phone thrills me, but if you want the 64 gigs, it's $499. So it's the the lowest priced iPhone at this point. So again, I think it's a nod to those that are concerned about Apple losing market share because their products are too expensive.
Right. So, right. Yeah. It's interesting seeing Apple make a move like this to appease Wall Street. It almost seems like, I mean, I'm hoping that they're really doing it to appease customers, but again, they're not, you know, they don't have a history of being a company that just does things because customers want them. In fact, they've done exactly the opposite. They've said people don't know what they want until we give it to them. So, it's a shift, right? This is not, I would say that, and I know Apple's not looking backwards at all, but if I'm looking backwards, I would say this is not a move Steve Jobs would have made.
No. And, you know, speaking of, I did, I actually did rent the latest movie, or I got it. I finally tracked it down at our, to take a little tangent here. And, but that was one of his mantras was, sure, you don't know what you want. I'm going to tell you what you want and you're going to like it. And I think Tim has his own style. And I think Tim and the rest of the team are deviating from that. Yeah, I think I would agree that because their product line is starting to get more complex, which is another thing that I think Steve was very adamant about, is, you know, we got to keep it simple, man. We can't have the days of having 20 different models of performers. Or, I mean, remember that? I mean, that was a nightmare, I think, for everybody, for Apple and for customers, because it was confusing. And I just hope Apple doesn't move too far away from where they are now, which is, you know, keep it simple, guys. You know, keep the quadrants, keep. And now I think so they have what, 5 choices for phones. So it's not too complex, I think, for most consumers.
No, but it could get, I mean, you know, it's a slippery slope, right? You know, if you offer a phone for every person that asks for a you know, one iteration off of it, things could get dicey. We go right back to the performer days, but well, we're not there yet. I mean, it you know, it's pretty far from there. And then of course there's the iPad Pro Mini or iPad Pro 9.7 inch size, which is really an iPad Air with iPad Pro guts and actually more than just guts. But I think that's a smart move for them. There are people that want a monster screen to draw on, and there are people that want the iPad Air size, and there are people that want the iPad Mini size, to be quite frank. And I think it's smart for them to, keep the guts upgraded in the, you know, quote unquote standard size iPad. That totally makes sense.
Yeah. And again, I think they, you know, addressed the pricing concern. So I have some notes in front of me here. So I think, you know, the entry level is $599
of the iPad Pro.
Correct.
Yeah.
And then I think, I don't know if they've ever done this before, but hey, if you want 256 gigs, hey, if you want to pay for it, sure, they'll offer that. I don't believe they've ever offered a 256 gig iPad. So that's another thing. Yep. I guess they're, because yeah, some people, I mean, you know, once you get your movies and your music and all that stuff there, I mean, you know, I still think 16 is insufficient on the iPhone, any iPhone anybody that does anything beyond using it as something to run apps. I mean, once you start getting into pictures and especially movies and stuff, I mean, 16 gigs, you deplete that pretty quick.
I agree. In fact, it frustrates me to no end that Apple will let people buy a 16 gig device. I suppose there are plenty of people that are happy with them, but the largest complaint or issue that I hear of from people who have bought the 16 gig phone is that it's a 16 gig phone. And that, you know, they run out of room, like you said, for pictures or even just messages, right? I mean, my daughter, now she's a 16-year-old kid, so she's, you know, I mean, she and her friends text a lot of pictures back and forth and all that. She has 6 gigs worth of messages on her phone. And good luck figuring out how to clear those out without driving yourself crazy. I mean, the only option you have is to go into settings, messages. I'll get you there. Hang on. Settings, messages, and then you choose how long you want to. There's a message history option about, I don't know, 3/4 of the way toward the end. And you can choose to keep them forever, 30 days or 1 year. If you set that to 30 days or a year, it'll begin the process of pruning those out. But that can be, you know, with 16 gigs on the phone, doesn't leave you a whole lot left if you're keeping all your messages. So,
right. Well, you bring up a good point that touches on questions that we constantly receive. Especially, I've been working with one person who is getting frustrated with the free iCloud.
Yeah.
Because if you back up, normally the phone will back up everything, including messages. And actually, I think this is a tip that they offer in one of their support articles, and you know, I'll try to dig it up. But messages get backed up, and if messages have movies or pictures, that gets backed up, and you can deplete your 5 gig freebie pretty quickly. There are other ways to do it, but I think that's one of them that not a lot of people realize.
Yep.
All right.
Yeah,
so it's cool. We had the iPad. Not a biggie, or at least for me. I mean, I just applied it, but so iOS 9.3, you touched on some of the features, and I haven't seen some of the newbies. I assume that's where you were going.
Yeah, it is. Well, we've got iOS 9.3, tvOS 2.2, or tvOS, 9.3? I'm going to confuse this. I apologize for the way my throat is today. In fact, it's far better than I expected it to be, you know, 15 minutes into the show. I thought I'd be out of a voice. I had a cold last week, and I sang yesterday. But anyway, and then so there's the new tvOS, and is that still 9.3, right? If I'm not getting that right. And then
I don't have the version because I don't have that.
Okay, well, look it up for me while I'm talking here. And then there's watchOS 2.2, and then OS 10, 10.11.4, right? All of which came out today, or are on their way out today. So that's the and there's lots of stuff in there, right? The new OS 10 update gives you the so tvOS is also 2.2. I knew I had that. Yeah.
Right.
I was driving myself
crazy. I'm looking at the site called Mac Observer.
They're
usually pretty good about that. Yeah. So tvOS 2.2, watchOS 2.2. Okay, but continue,
please. Yeah. Well, 10.11.4 is pretty good because it updates messages to add live photo support. So if you send live photos to people, they'll get those in their messages now and can see them as live photos on OS 10. And it also allows for the secure notes to sync between iOS, which is new in iOS 9.3, and OS 10, 10.11.4. So some good stuff there. I like it. And you'll be happy tonight. In fact, as the as we record, we're doing this one in the evening, folks. And so, John, your phone probably will shift into night shift mode at some point when you hit if you've turned it on. Yeah.
How does it know? No, I know how.
Well, yeah. Go into settings on your phone into display and brightness, and then night shift mode. You can turn it on and have it go automatically scheduled. I go. Sunset
display
to sunrise.
And brightness, auto. Night shift is off. Well, you know what? I
highly recommend turning it on. Set it from sunset to sunrise, and then you've got to decide. There's a color temperature slider at the bottom. Once it's on, you can slide that around and decide, you know, where you want that to live. On mine, I have it about 2 or 3 notches left of center. And that seems to work well for me.
Right. Well, I turned it on, and it by default, it scheduled it from 10 p.m. to 7 a.m. So,
and you can change that to sunsets to sunrise,
which I
find pretty handy, especially when traveling around and things are a little different. You've got to, if you do this though,
I'm gonna change that. Okay, so I changed it. So now sunrise. Okay, and
all right,
neat. Well, all right, so I got that on. So, but we'll see how I feel tonight.
Here's the thing. If you do this on your phone and your iPad and all of that stuff, you'll like it. But you have to have all your devices the same. If you're using them all kind of interchangeably at night, it'll seem really weird jumping from a phone that's on this to an iPad that's not. And as I've mentioned in previous shows, it's going to seem really strange jumping to your Macs once you've got this on your devices. So on my laptop, I had to install Flux to to make the same adjustment. And I just adjusted flux to match the white point of my phone when it's on this mode, and then everything's good. But it was like, I would pick up my Mac and it would sear my retinas, with, you know, just how different the white point was. So it's pretty cool. We'll put a link to Flux in the show notes for the third time in a row, I think.
Yeah, we already have.
Yeah, it's justgetflux.com. Yeah. So,
I think we're done with the, well, they talked about some new adapters. Like, did I hear something? They were talking about Ethernet to, I heard some people mumbling about that, that apparently now the new adapters enable Ethernet.
Yeah, with the iPad Pro, because it's a powered port. So you can, if you get the USB adapter, the camera kit, as they call it, it will have a USB adapter on it, or a USB port on it, out of the Lightning port. And then you can plug in Ethernet, and actually it works. It has worked for a while on the iPad previous, but you had to monkey with it to get it to work. This actually makes it like officially supported in a good way, which is great. I think it's a great thing. Why not? Right. You should be able to.
Okay. And I guess the final thing, and then we'll move to,
yeah, we've got some great tips.
Program.
Yep.
Apple Watch $299. All right.
The Sport Watch was dropped in price. That's right.
Yeah. So, but you know, not a big surprise that they typically do this. They lower prices of mature products or popular products. Pretty much.
My guess is we'll see an update, like an update to the product line in the fall for the Apple Watch. I think the Apple Watch.
And of course the new straps, which, you know, I mean, it makes me chuckle sometimes. I mean, I know it's fun to be invited to these as a member of the press, but you know, they're like, oh, we got a nylon band, and everybody's like, yay. And I'm like, well, guys, it's like a nylon band. I mean,
yeah.
Is it really that?
Well, you know,
cheer about?
Well, here's the thing about the Apple Watch. It's really easy to change the band on it. It's something you can do without any tools. It takes all of about 15 seconds to pop a new band on. So it's really easy to kind of move back and forth between other bands. Apple's bands are traditionally very expensive, but you can go onto Amazon or Alibaba and find really inexpensive, decent quality bands. I think I've mentioned it before, but I've got five or six of them that, you know, all told I spent about $100 on. You know, they were all less than $20 a piece. And I've had a black Milanese Loop band for a while that up until today you couldn't get from Apple, and a leather band, and, you know, all kinds of stuff. So it's fun. And the nylon, I think, is cool. They did it a little differently than I expected. You know, when I think nylon band, I think the traditional NATO strap kind of thing for a watch, and theirs is a kind of a different take on it. So I think it's cool. I think it's part of what the watch is. I think that's great. So,
okay. Well, maybe I'll consider, now that it's a lower price point, maybe I'll consider one.
I think you'd like it, to be honest.
The thing is, I've already purchased a new computer, Dave.
Do tell.
Well, I don't want it all to be about me and you, but no, it is all about us. No. So the thing is, Dave, I finally got an email from the refurb store saying, you know what? The Mac Mini that is the Mac Mini of your dreams is in stock. Would you like to get it? So I got it, and it's on the way. And actually, I chose the option because Apple ships things via FedEx, and they require a signature. And the thing is, you know, I'm a busy guy. I'm not always home. You know, I'm out and about stuff, you know, scoring points on Swarm. You know, crushing my enemies, which so far I'm getting pretty good at that.
your watch will make Swarm an easier app to use, you know, if you get the Apple Watch. So,
yeah, it was pretty good on the phone. I like Swarm. Swarm is actually kind of fun. Between that and Foursquare, I'm having a lot of fun with it. But finally, Dave, so I got the, so it's a 2014 Mac Mini 2.0. I don't have it in front of me right now. But it's the machine of my dreams, and my justification for upgrading is right now my MacBook Pro, which is a 2012, I believe, has USB 3 and Thunderbolt. The thing is, my Mac Mini right now, which is a 2010, which is a bit long in the tooth, has USB 2 and no Thunderbolt. So it's just kind of lagging as far as peripheral support. So this 2014 Mac Mini that I got from the refurb store for like five something, I had to do it. I just want to get my machines in sync.
So what right now. What kind of processor?
Well, I think it's a. I'll try to bring up my order.
Okay.
Which actually, you know what? So while I'm babbling here, I can bring it up. So, dude, the Apple Store app on the phone actually has it, because the thing is,
of course.
So if you can at all purchase things under your Apple ID, do it. And that's what I did. So as soon as I went to the refurb store and they said, hey, would you like to buy this? You know, please log in. And I'm like, well, I'm going to log in with my Apple ID that I have all my other things under.
Of course.
And I did that. And actually right now, so I'll give you a high level. So if I go to Apple Store, you know, logs me right in and orders. So, and now it's saying Touch ID.
You're actually going to walk us through this here, John, right? We've all been using the Apple Store app. Okay. All right.
Well, no. Refurbished Mac Mini 2.6 gigahertz, dual core Intel Core i5.
Okay. Okay. So it's the i5. All right.
Yeah. So it's the latest. Plenty of horsepower for me. And it has USB 3, has Thunderbolt. It comes with, and the thing is, you can still replace the drive on this. So the thing is, it has 8 gigs of RAM, which for me is fine because that's what I have on my Mini right now, and that's fine. And it comes with a 1 terabyte drive, which I'm going to rip out of there at some point because it's, you know, like Apple typically does. They put rather low-powered rotational drives in their machine. So it's a 1 terabyte 5400. I'll probably use it for backup. But And I chose to have it delivered to my local Apple Store, favorite Apple Store in Trumbull,
sure.
Rather than doing the delivery thing. So the thing is, I'm going to get a notification. I signed up for a notification. Saying, you know, when it arrives there, let me know and I'll, you know, drive to the Trumbull Mall and pick it up.
Cool.
But it was about time, and I've already got a mutual friend of ours, I think I'm in discussions with to give this machine a new home, because it's still usable for certain things. But again, I wanted to get something that was on parity with my portable as far as ports. Was really my justification, and secondary.
Now, but your portable is quad core, right? Not just dual core.
Well, depending on who you talk to, I mean, the thing is, my portable. So I'm looking here; it's a 2.3 gigahertz Intel Core i7, which
okay.
Depending on who you talk to, is either a quad core or some programs actually reported as an 8.
Right. Well, it's hyper threading.
It's the hyper threading.
Yeah. Okay, so it's still not quite on par with your laptop. In terms of,
but I was really looking for the thing I was really looking for, my friend, was USB 3. Having one machine with USB 3 and the other with USB 2 is just and Thunderbolt. The thing is, this the portable has Thunderbolt and the Mac Mini 2010 does not. So,
right.
You know, they had a lapse where they you know were kind of stagnating on you know what they were offering for ports. So,
I'm curious how much of a speed delta you notice on that machine going, being that it's still dual core. Selfishly, not necessarily to publish, but I would love to have video on while we do this show. And right now the reason we can't do that is because your machine's not fast enough. So I'm hoping your new machine is fast enough for you and I to have a video stream between us to get each other's attention and all that good stuff. It works out quite well. Yeah.
That was my thought. And I suspect that because the thing is, this machine still with the Core 2 Duo, which, you know, it's a fine processor in the day.
Yeah.
But, this thing will regularly peg at 100%. The thing is, my MacBook Pro typically doesn't. Now, this new machine is an i5. Okay, it's not an i7.
And it's also half the cores. That's my big concern is that you probably, I don't think you bought
enough
cores.
It's going to be
better. Yeah. Oh. It's an iteration. I don't mean to burst your post-purchase bubble. I'm hoping it works out well for
you. Well, I do believe I can return it if I'm unhappy.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
I do believe it's a return policy, but yep. I suspect that it will serve my needs. But
cool.
You and I, that was in the back of my mind because I know that you have this fixation on us doing video.
Yeah. Well, it would be a good thing. Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Okay.
Let's, we've got some great tips.
The show.
We've got some great tips to go through here. In fact, this would normally be a cool stuff found week if we balance with our back and forth, you know, split between the two tips and then cool stuff found. But we have so many good ones that I want to get to those. But first, if it's all the same to you, John, I would love to talk about our three sponsors.
Outstanding.
All right. Our first sponsor today is one that started out as a cool stuff found. That is ProXPN. Now, this is a VPN. This allows you to ensure that you have a secure connection from wherever you are so that the people that manage the connection where you are cannot see it, cannot see anything. In fact, all they can see is that you are connecting to a VPN service. They don't know what you're doing. They don't know anything. Very, very handy, especially if you're out working in a coffee house or, on a hotel network or really anywhere you are. The thing I like about ProXPN is that they want as little information about you as possible. If you go to proxpn.com/MacGeekGab, you can sign up for a free account, 100% free. They don't ask for your credit card. This isn't some trial or anything. It is 100% free for life. Now, if you need to use more bandwidth than the free account allows, and the free account's pretty good, it'll let you check your email and do a couple of things. And if you're just using it periodically, that's probably going to be enough for you. But if you need more, coupon code GAB50, GAB50, saves you up to 50% off of their pro plans that give you far more bandwidth and all of that good stuff. One thing I want to talk about in terms of their privacy, especially in light of everything that's happening with Apple and all of that stuff right now, they have on their website what's called a canary policy. Now, this is on their privacy page there. It's possible that they could get served not only a subpoena for information, but a gag order, which means they can't tell you they've received a subpoena. So instead, what they do is every day they go on their website and they say, for example, as of 2016-03-21, we have not had any gag orders relating to our users or our IPs. They update this every day. So if they don't update it, A, they haven't broken the gag order, and B, you know that they've gotten one. So I think that's pretty cool, and I like the concept of a canary policy, and I'm glad that they do this. You got to check it out, proxpn.com/MacGeekGab, where coupon code GAB50 saves you up to 50% off of their pro services. However, proxpn.com/MacGeekGab will get you a free VPN for life. Go check it out right now. Our thanks to ProXPN for sponsoring this episode. Our second sponsor are our good friends at Otherworld Computing, also known as MacSales.com. And really, that's all you need to know to get started finding all the things you might want to upgrade your Mac. They've got some great SSD upgrades for both the MacBook Pro from 2013 to current, as well as the MacBook Air 2013 to current. Both can now be upgraded to 1 terabyte. That's a big deal. You're carrying this thing around with you. You want to have all your stuff with you. Having a terabyte inside that thing makes a big, big difference. And Otherworld Computing has figured it out and sells you not only the drive, the actual hardware, but they also have the instructions and the tools so that you can put this thing in yourself. We like to do stuff ourselves here. The big problem with doing stuff yourself on a laptop is not knowing what to do often. Sometimes it's just impossible, but other times you just need to know the steps, and Otherworld Computing takes care of providing you with the steps as well as the tools if you need them. If you already have the tools, well, they'll still give you the steps. You can save a little bit of money on the tools. So you got to check this out. Go to maxsales.com. and check out their SSD flash storage upgrade options for both your MacBook Air and your MacBook Pro. If you need RAM, if you need an external hard drive, really anything to upgrade your Mac, this is where I start. You got to check it out. MacSales.com. Our thanks to Otherworld Computing for sponsoring this episode. Our third sponsor for today is Barebones Software at barebones.com. The folks there are geeks. There's no question about it, but they're geeks in the best way because they are meticulous geeks and they meticulously handcraft their software. And it feels like it. You can tell just by using it that they care about every little nuance. I know these people, they don't take themselves too seriously, but they take their work extremely seriously, very carefully crafting each and every bit of the software that they deliver to you. BB Edit, I've mentioned this a million times, I'm going to say it again, is a piece of software that I cannot live without. We're using it literally right now as we're doing this show and crafting our own show notes for you. We can only hope to craft our show notes with the same meticulousness. Is that a word? That the folks at Bare Bones used to create the software that we use to do at BB Edit. Really, really awesome stuff. Everything that you go to do in BB Edit, it's obvious they've tried this and worked out the entire flow. And it just keeps getting better, even when you didn't think it needed to. For example, I like to use BB Edit all the time to compare two documents. And that works great. And it always has worked great. But in the latest version, they actually made it so that it opens up this whole new compare window that's all in one, shows you both documents, shows you the changes at the bottom. But as you're going through it, it moves both documents in parallel to each other so that you can really see where you are and what you're looking at. Awesome stuff. You got to check it out. Go to barebones.com, check out BB Edit. You can download a free trial. I highly recommend it. Let us know what you think, and our thanks to Bare Bones for sponsoring this episode. It's tip time, folks. We promised it. Here it comes. The first tip that we want to share today is from Borge. I believe I've got the pronunciation right. And he says, I just heard Matt Geekab 596, and you talk about Total Finder and its ability to cut and paste. You said that it's not possible in the Finder, but it is. It's not called out. But just highlight your file that you wish to move in the Finder and use Command C to copy it like you would. Now comes the trick. Instead of using Command V to paste, use Option Command V to move it. That effectively is the same as cut and paste. Since you can also find it in the Edit menu if, of course, you hold down the Option key. Since this has been possible in several versions of OS X. Thank you so much, Borge. That's a huge tip. And obviously it taught us something. So there's definitely one thing that we've learned today, and we're happy to share it. So good stuff. Right, John?
It's close enough. It's not exactly the same, but I would say yes. Thank you. Mm. And we had multiple people. I think Borge with a slash to the O.
I like that. Yeah, that's good. With the a true zero. That's right. All right. Moving on to Dominic. Dominic writes, again, about show 596, another possibility for the guy with the problem with the Ethernet port on his Thunderbolt display is that a firmware update might make it go away. Since the latest update, version 1.2, says in Apple's vague way that it improves reliability when connecting devices, and Dominic found that it solved an Ethernet issue for him. So thank you so much, Dominic, for sharing that too. It's always important to remember that those updates are out there. So good stuff. John, on the tips front, you found something cool. You found, I'll let you take it.
Yes, I did. So we were talking about Time Machine and how sometimes Time Machine may back up certain things and take up tons of space.
Yes.
And then I thought I was being clever. So the thing is, I found something in application support. So if you go to slash library, I believe application support, a lot of applications will put things there. And I found this, as did some other listeners, that certain apps will put rather large files in there. And by default, Time Machine will back them up. Well, I found, and then Dave, you scratched your head because I thought I was doing something clever. And I said, well, you know what? I'm going to exclude slash library slash caches.
Right. Right.
You're like, I don't think that's necessary, dude, because I'm pretty sure Time Machine excludes that.
Yeah.
The thing is, it allowed me to put it there, and it actually even reported the size of it.
Sure.
But then I found at Stack Exchange. So the thing is, Dave, yes, there is. So you were correct.
Okay.
Which is often the case, but not always. But no, in this case,
not,
you were correct.
It's not always the case. Despite how confident I might sound about things, it's possible. Yeah, that's right. So I'm glad you checked this.
But the thing is, so I found an article at Stack Exchange, and we'll, of course, link to it in the lovingly handcrafted with BB Edit show notes. There is a list of standard what they call standard exclusions. And where can you find this list? Well, I'm not going to list all the things because there's a lot of them, and it actually included these cache directories, Dave, which is a smart thing because why back up caches?
Right.
And quickly, it's in /system/library/core services. So be careful because once you get in core services, you know, don't change things in there. But beyond that, /backup D, which is the backup process, /bundle/contents/resources/stdexclusions.plist. If you open that plist file, that will show you all of the directories the Time Machine just ignores.
Cool.
So, to your point, if you want to know whether what you're adding to the exclusion list is redundant, that's the place to look. Again, please just open that file. Do not change it. If you want to change it, you're on your own.
Can you just use a quick look in the Finder to just hit the space bar and see the contents without even being able to edit it?
I do not know.
Okay.
I double-clicked on it, and actually, by default, if you have the developer tools installed, mm-hmm. it will, I think it runs Xcode, or I think plist editor.
Yeah.
And it showed me, and yeah, you have to click on the triangles, but it's a good point. Yeah, Time Machine is smart enough not to back up caches and other things that are, I would say, transitory, or things that don't make sense to back up.
Right. Logs, I think, are one of those things, too, that it just doesn't grab.
I'm almost certain, yeah, because, yeah who needs that stuff?
Right.
So, well, may.
Yeah.
But if you want to, then. But this is good to know in that. Now, things like, Carbon Copy Cloner, I'm sure, do not do this.
Well, no, Carbon Copy Cloner, I believe, will skip caches as well.
You know what? I think you're right, too.
Yeah.
Carbon Copy Cloner, I think what you want to do is you may want to go to an advanced mode to see what it excludes. I don't think it's as comprehensive as Time Machine as far as what it excludes, but it will exclude certain things. Like, for example, I found this out. It excludes its own flashback directory, whatever it's called. I'm trying to remember here.
It's safety net.
Safety net. Yeah. It excludes that because it's like, dude, why are you backing up?
Right.
Old versions of things that you already backed up. So it excludes that, I found, but it excludes other things as well. But you have to go to the advanced mode. Kind of what we just told you to do here.
Yeah, exactly.
This is
cool. Hey, so Bruce wrote in and he said, here's an excellent and fascinating article on 4-digit pins that I thought you guys would appreciate. And sure enough, he's totally right. It's this article. What someone did is they went and looked at, they found files of 4-digit pins that people had used. And they kind of did an analysis on them all, right? And they did some cool things with that analysis. And we'll put a link to the article in the show notes. But they listed the top 20 pins, right, that people use, and 1, 2, 3, 4 is by far the most common. So they say they found 3.4 million examples of real world examples of 4-digit passwords, and then they did this analysis on them all. So 10.7% of those passwords were 1, 2, 3, 4. That the second most common was 1, 1, 1, 1, and then you've got kind of all the repeating digits and the alternating digits. 1, 2, 1, 2 is number 4. Position number 22 they found was a little odd, because it was 2580, and he was trying to figure out the significance of it until he realized that it's just straight down the middle of the keypad. So that's why that works on a phone. There you go. The interesting thing is he also listed the 20 least frequently used 4-digit pins, and so the one at the very end was is very important to emphasize here. 8068. Of course, the fact that it's now being publicized as the least popular 4-digit pin, it makes it probably not the least popular 4-digit pin anymore, but interesting nonetheless. So yeah, don't use 8068. Really, you would be better off using a 6-digit pin, much harder to hack, but There you go. So it's just a cool article. Thank you so much for sharing, Bruce. Did you take a look at this too, John?
The one thing that jumped out at me, Dave, so especially for musicians, mostly in the United States, if you were talking a 7-digit PIN,
you could probably guess
what is one of the more common ones.
Yeah, I don't think it's just musicians. It's pretty much anybody that lived through the 80s. It'd be 8675309.
Exactly. At first, he was like, what do these numbers mean?
Yeah.
Of course, Jenny, who do I turn to? Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah,
hilarious.
Speaking of decades, that was one of the more popular things was, you know, he found all these numbers beginning with 1-9, and it was, you know, decades, either year of a person's birth or, you know, their child's birth or, you know, whatever it is. So for whatever reason,
90210 is probably another one. And
well, in a five, that's a 5-digit PIN, not 4.
Yeah. If you're talking 5-digit.
Yeah. So.
And do you remember 02134?
02134. Yeah, why does that sound familiar to me?
I think that was a TV show. Boston, Mass. 02134.
Oh.
It was Zoom. Remember that? It was a kid's show.
Yeah, that was.
But at the end, they always did the zip code where it was produced in Boston. And so they said 02134.
Yeah, so you just highlighted the difference, the relatively minor difference between our ages. But that's like that and H.R. Puffin stuff. Like those were not part of my world as a kid.
Oh.
But like you
Sid
and
Marty Croft productions,
I know Sid and Marty Croft.
You those?
Well, okay. They did Land of the Lost, didn't they? With the Sleestaks, wasn't that them too?
Which was creepy when I was little. Oh, and yeah. Now you look at it and it's like, oh man, so oh, much cheesy.
Oh yeah. Yeah, but it was like those Sleestaks were scary. They were terrifying. Yes. Yeah. That's awesome. All right. Well, thank you for that detour, folks. And thank you, Bruce, for instigating it. Lastly, a tip from Bill, just to wrap up a conversation that we seem to have been having for a long, long time. Bill writes, a few weeks ago, you were talking about merging two video files. He says, I found the best way to do this is a piece of software called MKV Toolmix. He says, I convert both files to MKV first using make MKV. And then I add the first one to MKV Toolmix and append the second one. I can then use Handbrake to convert the resulting file to MP4 or M4B. The reason I do it this way is that it preserves the chapter information from both files. In the past, when I've tried doing this, the second file loses its chapter info and becomes one long chapter appended to the end of the first file. So thank you so much, Bill. Great tip. Good stuff. I like it. Fun. Anything from you to add to this one, Mr.
No.
John? No. All right. With that in mind, I think it's time to move on to our questions. John, you want to take us to Terry?
I'm going to take you to Terry. Terry has a good one, and actually it's very timely, especially in light of my talking about getting a new Mac Mini and Apple's proclivity. Is that right? Apple's habit of putting underpowered hard drives in a lot of their machines.
Mm.
So here's what Terry has to say. Hi, Dave and John. Can you tell me why the internal HDD is only linked at 3 gigabits per second and not 6? This is a factory mid-2012 Mac Mini stock. I've ordered an SSD from Crucial and was hoping it would run at 6 gigabit link speed. And then he gives us a printout. And you may ask yourself, where did he get this printout of the various statistics about his machine? And I'm going to tell you where. So if you go to, well, there's a few ways you can get this. You can go to About This Mac in the Apple menu and then click on System Report. Or the other clever way to do this, here we go. Yeah, if you click on the Apple and then you hold down Alt or Option, you will also see system information. Same thing. And we'll run a program, and the place you want to go in that program is typically under the hardware category, and I think under typically the SATA category. So SATA is serially ATA, and that's the bus that talks to things like hard drives and probably some other devices like CD-ROMs, if you even have one, which actually, Dave, the machine I'm getting does not, although the one I have does. So you'll see a bunch of statistics about your SATA connection. And what he saw was Intel 6 series chipset. Okay, that's great. So using an Intel chip product, blah, blah. Link speed. 6 gigabits. Negotiated link speed, 3 gigabits. Why is this happening, Dave? And I'll tell you why, because I look further down on the list here, and the hard drive that he has is a Toshiba MK5065GSXF. So, using my Google Foo, I found these stats on this drive. And you know what? This drive happens to have a 3 gigabit per second, also known as SATA 2, connector.
Oh,
so that's
okay.
Exactly what's or interface. So that's exactly why this is happening. So when you see negotiated link speed, what happens is the chipset in the computer says, yep, I can do SATA 3 or 6 gigs. And the drive is like, nope, I can't. So let's negotiate. Let's talk. And it's like, I can only do 3. Is that okay? And it's like, well, I guess.
Sure.
If it's the best you can do. So that's why that's happening. To the question of whether your SSD will do 6 gigabits, well,
it doesn't matter.
Well, no. Make sure the SSD that you purchase is in fact capable of what we are going to call SATA 3,
right,
which is 6 gigabits. If you buy an SSD, which I suppose you could, if you want to save some coin and you don't need it, I suppose you could buy a SATA 2 or SATA 1 SSD. So I don't know why you would, and I don't know if they even exist, but seeing as how hard disk drives or rotational drives with SATA 2 exist, I would say that there may be SSDs that also have SATA 2 interfaces. So just make sure when you buy the drive that it does have a SATA 3 interface, and you should be good to go on your Mac Mini mid-2012.
Sweet. Thank you, Mr. Braun. All right. Jose has a... I love questions like this. It's great. He says... it's a tiny little text in this thing. Can I zoom that in? Is that possible? All right, here we go.
Pinch or expand?
Yeah, he says... I got it. I'm a minister, he says, and I would like to see in a map the location of where all the members of the church are. They've given us all their addresses, and I've put it in the contacts app on one of our Macs. Do you know of any application or trick that could help me with this, preferably free or inexpensive? It's a great question. I don't think there's a way to do this with Apple's contacts, but if one of you knows about it, please let us know. However, inside Apple's contacts, you can sync your contacts to many things. If you just go into, you know, contacts accounts, you can sync them to iCloud, of course, but you can also sync to Google. So I recommend you set up a Google account. And obviously you need to be careful what Google account you use here, because, you know, you're talking about the privacy of your members, but I'll leave that up to you. I think you'll handle it just fine. But sync them to a Google account. And then there is a Chrome extension called Map My Contacts that will do exactly what you're looking for. So as long as you sync, and once you add the Google account to your contacts app on your Mac, it becomes a two-way sync. It's totally, you won't even think about it anymore. And of course, that's both good and bad. You need to be aware that you're going to always be syncing everything on that Mac unless you turn it off to Google as well. But that's what's going to do it. And we'll put a link to this Map My Contacts extension. It's just a Chrome extension. We'll put it in our lovingly handcrafted show notes, of course. So that's my answer for that. John, do you have any other thoughts on this?
No.
Okay. Well, that was helpful. That's good. Yeah.
It's
good.
There could be a Safari extension.
There's not. There could be. Okay. You're right. Yeah. I didn't find it. But it's possible. Yeah.
I mean, there could be. And if you wanted to find Safari extensions, what are Safari extensions? Well, they're similar to Chrome.
Yeah.
But if you go to the Safari menu in Safari, you will see in the Safari menu, Safari extensions, dot, dot, dot. And that'll bring you to a page at Apple, which will advertise and let you search through Safari extensions. And maybe there is one. I honestly did not search for a solution to this problem.
Yeah.
My bad.
No. It's not bad at all. It's one of those interesting things. I like this stuff. It's good. It's fun. All right. And then on to Annie. Annie asks, do you have any recommendations for an email client for my Mac? I currently use the built-in mail client, but I would like to try something else. There's lots of them. A lot of people are happy with Thunderbird on OS X, Airmail is one that's got a lot of traction. Outlook is not something to be overlooked. There's a lot of people very, very happy with that on all platforms, Mac and iOS. Cloud Magic is another one. There's lots of them. The question you need to ask yourself is, why are you moving away? I don't say that to discourage you. I say it so that you can narrow down what it is you're looking for. You know, if you're using Gmail, okay, now there's some specific apps that are going to work better or worse for you. Are you using an Exchange server? Okay, maybe Outlook in that case might be a little more synced up with the world you're living in. I still use Apple Mail, and I use Google for the most part these days as my back end. I still want to move away from them for a variety of reasons. But for right now, I'm still with them. I like Apple Mail because of how extensible it is, which means I can run things like Mail Acton, Signature Profiler, GPG Mail, all these extensions that are built to work with Apple Mail. Third-party mail clients don't typically have enough of a user base to attract other developers to write extensions for them, even if they are extensible, and not all of them are. So that's my reason for staying with Apple Mail. But again, you know, if you look and find another mail client that serves your needs and you don't need extensions, well, then just go with that. But that's the question, is ask yourself, what is it that I'm not getting out of Apple Mail? And if it's just general email that you want to, you know, you just want to try something different to be different, I would look at Thunderbird or Outlook, maybe Airmail. Those would be kind of the top three in my mind of the alternative mail clients. John, do you have any thoughts on this?
I did try. I'll have to revisit it. I was pretty happy with Outlook.
Yeah.
It did almost everything I wanted an email client to do, though I think it had some problems with aliases or managing mm-hmm. email accounts that were, you know, kind of shadowed, if you will, or, you know, forwarded from another domain.
Sure.
I'll revisit it. One thing worth mentioning is that because I use them, and so far I'm pretty happy with them, is Yahoo actually does have an iOS email client.
But she's talking about for her Mac, but I mean, you know, yep.
Well, and their web interface isn't too bad either.
Okay.
So just to offer that, but on iOS, maybe they do offer a Mac client. You know, I haven't even explored that.
Yep.
Just because I'm like you, I'm pretty happy so far with Mail. Well,
yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, sometimes unless it screws up.
Right, right, right.
But, you know, I'm actually curious now if Yahoo Mail, if there is a...
I don't think there is. They've they've done some stupid things lately. But
it appears there are third... nothing officially from Apple. Though I'm sorry, Yahoo.
Yahoo, but, yeah, right.
Certainly on iOS, they do have one.
Right, right.
So,
but yeah, just ask yourself the question, what is it that I'm, why is it that you want to change? And it could just be that you want change. Okay. No problem. You know, then go for one of these more generic, kind of less specialized third party clients. Cause there's some that are very, very specialized, and even Google has one. So yeah, it's worth checking it all out. All right, John, you want to take us to Kaz? Is that a good place to go?
I hate to, but yes, I will.
Okay.
So, well, it involves a fish shake, I think. But so Kaz says, "Hi, guys. Although this is not technically a Mac question, though I think it is, I need your help. I recently bought a camcorder, a Panasonic HC-V770. And while I'm an avid photographer, I'm new to this whole video recording stuff. The camcorder, at its highest recording format mode, records in AVCHD at 1080/60p. However, when I inserted the recorded SD card in my Mac, Finder will not show me the actual scenes. I thought each scene is an individual file, and I can only play back the scenes using QuickTime Player. I can't even copy the files from the SD card to my hard disk drive, or HDD. I think that's about it. I don't think I need to read any more here, but I've run into this, Dave. So here's the problem. Panasonic and their infinite wisdom. And I actually did, for the longest time, I was a fan of Lumix cameras, which are from these guys. And they decided they know better. So they're going to come up with this somewhat proprietary format.
Mm.
So I found a way to get around it. So looking back in my archives or my records, Dave, I did have to deal with this. So I wasn't able to do it live, but I think this will help you. So if you look at the AVCHD file, and how do you do this? Well, you right click on it or control click on it.
So it's a package?
Yes.
Really?
Isn't that annoying? Okay.
So somebody other than Apple defined their own package format.
Isn't that great?
For a camera that could be used on any system.
Yeah.
So is it truly that Panasonic defined a package, or is it that OS X decided to see it as a package? You know what I mean?
It's all I know is that the last time I looked at one of these files, I had to say open package in order to look inside of it.
Yeah, I guess it doesn't matter. If you're on a Mac, it looks like a package.
And what happens is the last I looked at one of these AVCHD files, if you say open package, within that is yet another package, BDMV. Mm. And then inside of that is a folder. And within that is a bunch of files that are .mts, which I think is something that borders on something standard.
Okay.
So that's where you have to go in order to get to the files. And I think at the time when I was doing this, I used Aperture. I'm not sure if Photos or something else deals with it. Those you should be able to deal with in QuickTime Player, and then QuickTime Player does have a save and also an export option. So I think that is going to be your best path. The other path is that I did find something called free AVCHD to MOV, MOV being Apple's movie format. So you can try that. And then the last thing, Dave, is that I'm almost certain, though I didn't have an AVCHD file, but Graphic Converter, despite its name, will also play and process, and I think also maybe load and export these type of files. And the thing is, you can get Graphic Converter. I've been using it for years. I think you have as well. Every now and then, you got to throw down some coin to get the latest version.
Sure.
But you may want to see if that'll handle the conversion, opening it and exporting it as well. So that's what I got to offer, but I'm going to offer a fish shake to Panasonic. Like, guys, what do you do? Are you that special that you need to come up with a proprietary video format? Are you really that much better than everybody else? And they seem to think that they are. I don't.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I mean, their camera hardware is wonderful. It's great. But, dude, when you're recording video, man, just stick with the pack, all right?
So, Tommy in the chat room at MacGeekup.com/stream suggests using Handbrake. Does that, did you ever try that? Because that, my guess is he's right.
I had not, but Handbrake is, I use it, and I think you use it, and most people use it for ripping DVDs, but that would indicate to me that buried within Handbrake is the ability to convert videos from one format to another.
Yeah.
So, that's a great suggestion.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what Handbrake does, right? Because for Blu-rays, I rip them to MKV and then use Handbrake to take it the rest of the way to get it to where I want it to be. So, it's crazy stuff, man. All right. We're going to move to Royce here. Royce has some good questions. They might seem a little, we'll just read it. Royce, like many of us, starts out by saying, I am an accidental IT guy at my company due to the disappearance of our former IT person and the lack of his replacement. I'm learning things as I go. I have two questions. Number one, I have a Mac Mini serving as a file server on the network. It doesn't do anything else and is not outward facing to the web. I'm getting alerts that the security certificates on it have expired. I'm not sure how to renew them or even if I need to renew them. I'd rather not deal with them if they don't serve some purpose on my LAN. And I'll read question number two, and then we'll answer them in order, or maybe in reverse order. See how we feel. Question number two is, in the server room, I noticed that the lights on the switches and the gateway are constantly flashing rapidly in unison, even first thing in the morning when no one else is in the network and in the office except me. Someone told me this is not good, and another person said this is normal. I've never seen them when they are not flashing. Is there a rogue device on my network causing this, or is something else wrong? The flashing continues even when disconnected from the internet modem. So we'll do this in reverse, actually. It's pretty normal, in my experience, for computers to pretty much always have something to say to each other, even when a user is not present. If you're sharing files or sharing printers, there's always going to be a little bit of chatter going on where things sort of keep saying, hey, I'm here. And other things say, I got you, you're there. And then beyond that, there's protocols like DHCP and ARP that kind of, for lack of a more descriptive term, just keep your network running and make sure that devices aren't crashing into each other and all of that. So, yeah, some traffic on a switch kind of all the time, as long as there's like more than one device plugged into it, and maybe even if there's only one device plugged into it, that's pretty normal. You know, computers and all these other devices that we plug in, they're chatty on the network. It's not that they're responsive. They are proactive about letting other devices know they're there. Would you agree with that, John?
Absolutely. And if you're curious, you may want to break out a tool to see what's happening. Because, yeah, everybody's, as long as there's something plugged into the network, and in all likelihood, if for no other reason, it's going to either be asking what's happening or accepting information from other people saying, right, hey, do this. It's just the way it works. So, yeah. So whoever said that the blinking lights are bad, in my humble opinion, is misinformed.
Or now, intentionally misleading you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's put on our tinfoil hats. Man. That's right.
Now, the thing is that you may ask yourself,
how did I get here?
Right. But you may want to see what exactly is going across your network. And in that case, then you could dig in, and there are the tools to do this. The one that I like is Wireshark.
For this?
But there are absolutely other tools. Yeah. Dabuki, which you and I have a fondness for, because it lets you do some sneaky kind of things here to target certain devices. But Dabuki is another tool that I would recommend checking out that shows you what chatter is occurring on your network. But for a network with anything plugged into it, to have no traffic, to me, is the exception rather than the rule. There's always something happening.
Right.
At least I've never seen a situation where there's nothing happening. Now, I suppose if you lock down your network and you're in a highly secure environment and you got, you know, all the security and stuff, I suppose it's possible you could have a network where there is nothing happening. But I have never, in my experience, seen such a thing.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree. Yeah. And Will Run for Fun in the chat room mentions that Wireshark will only show you the things that your computer sees. And it's possible. I mean, if there's something that's broadcasting to everything on the network, then of course you're going to see that because that's the point. But the way a switch works, it actually compartmentalizes the traffic to make things more efficient. And it says, okay, these two devices need to talk, so I'm just going to limit their traffic to just them. And if you plug into another switch, you're not going to see it in Wireshark. Dabuki, on the other hand, will let you monitor the traffic meant for another device, and so that can be really handy in terms of seeing what's going on your network. My guess, though, in the situation that Royce describes here, Wireshark is going to do enough to sort of appease you and show you, yeah, look, there's all this broadcast traffic happening. It's normal. It's all good. Yeah.
Now, of course, the other thing is if you are in an admin role and you actually have administrator access to the switch, then of course you can see everything. But as Dave said, a switch, its purpose is... So in the old days, you had a thing called a hub. And the thing is, the problem with the hub is they were very inefficient because they took traffic and they broadcast it to everybody. And then
everything to everyone. Yeah, that's right.
And then everybody had to decide, okay, here's the parts that I'm going to process because I think they're for me. The problem is that strategy is most smart people doing networks devices eventually figured out is, you know, it's kind of inefficient for me to broadcast everything to everybody. Why don't we make the device smart so it only sends traffic from the sender to the recipient if I think that is the intent of the traffic. And so switches are way more efficient.
Right.
But the downside is that you can't be a sneaky little spy dude and monitor traffic not meant for you, because typically, unless you use something like Dabuki, which does something I believe called ARP spoofing.
Right.
So normally you can't do this. If traffic is not meant for you, normally you cannot see it. But if you use a tool that does clever things like Dabuki, then yes, you can see things that are not necessarily meant for you. Now, they may still be encrypted scrambled.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, whoever's using it is using HTTPS or certificates or things like that. And that may be leading to the second question here. But
it is. Yeah, no, that's I'm glad, because I was actually had forgotten about the second question. I'll blame my head cold. And thank you, John. So the second question, I'm guessing if you're getting warnings about certificates, you are probably on an old OS, or at least an unupdated version of whatever OS you're on. Here's the thing. I get that that server is not front facing to the web. However, unless that server is not doing anything on the internet, you're going to want to update those certificates, even pulling things from the internet, like updates for other pieces of software. You're going to need to connect to secure sites from time to time. You're going to need to do things like that. And those root certificates that live on your Mac are the core of that. So it is worth doing those updates. And in my opinion, I think it should just come with an OS update. You know, if you run, and I get that's a difficult thing to do, because it usually requires a restart of the system, and that logs everyone off. So you might have to do this, you know, when you get there and then there's no one there or anything like that. But you do want to make sure those certificates are up to date. That's my opinion, John.
It depends on what the certificate is for. So I'm actually running. So actually on both of my machines, I've run OS 10 server, and there is a certificate category under the server thing. Now, it could be a certificate that's a root certificate, as you pointed out. So root certificates are certificates that are issued by, you know, these companies that also issue certificates that secure websites. And it could be that the root is expired or old, in which case, yeah, as Dave said, you want to update that. But it could be a certificate that the server has generated to secure traffic between itself and others. And the thing is, you will get alerts from OS 10 server saying, yeah, dude, this is going to expire. The thing is, expired certificates will still secure traffic, but as you've seen, they're going to raise alerts not only on the server, but probably any client that tries to connect to your server is also going to complain, saying, well, you know, I see the certificate, but it's old. And a lot of times you can override that sort of thing and say, okay, well, even though the certificate on this server is old, which to me implies that somebody's not paying attention and not doing their job.
Right.
or doesn't want to pay to get a new certificate. So the thing is that the traffic may still be encrypted, but it's a warning sign that something's not right. And you should really fix that. Now, it could be, depending on how you're, system or systems are set up, that they may just refuse to connect to a site that has an expired certificate, in which case then your traffic is at risk. So depending on the type of certificate, if it's a root certificate or a self-signed, the thing is, OS 10 will, I mean, I'm looking right now, and I've gotten these alerts too. I don't know if you run server on a regular basis.
Not routinely, no.
But mine will come up. And the thing is, you can also generate certificates. For example, if you're a developer, you will also, I think, in some cases, be asked to generate a certificate. So you can sign your stuff that you
sure.
send to Apple. And no, it's going to come to you
right.
and say, and I think push notifications, which you do, Dave, I think that also happens, is that those are signed and in a sense secure, and at some point you're going to get a warning saying, dude, your certificate for your push notifications is expiring, you better renew it, otherwise it's I think it just won't work.
Well, yeah, right. That's outward pushed stuff. But even I bet you're right. These are internal certificates for their network. I didn't even think of that when this came up. So I'm sure you're right. And you want to renew those. You want to keep those up to date. And it should be pretty straightforward. We'll put a couple of things in the show notes for you, and that should take care of it. All right, John. I know you have to get off and shortly here and do Mac Roundtable, where you guys are going to talk about the Apple event in greater detail than we did here. So I want to do one last question, and we'll go to Eric. And Eric asks, it just makes me even sad to bring this up. On my iPhone 6S Plus running iOS 9.2.1, I have keyboard shortcuts set up in Settings, General, Keyboard, Text Replacement. For the life of me, I can't get these keyboard shortcuts to migrate over to my mid-2010 iMac running El Capitan. They do appear on my mid-2012 MacBook Pro running El Capitan. On the iMac and the phone, I've toggled iCloud Drive on and off with no luck. Any suggestions? Well, other than giving up on technology for good and just kind of living out in the woods, Eric, I guess we'll offer some suggestions. But I routinely have this problem. This is one of these holy grail questions. Maybe not holy grail. It's a white whale question of Mac Geek Gab. We have another one. It's that whole Wi-Fi network syncing thing. But I have a tip on that I want to share to enlighten everyone. We'll hit that quickly at the end here. But this is one of those because it's so darned inconsistent. Here's the things that I've tried and had work at times. One of them is signing completely out of iCloud and then signing back in. That can fix it, as can toggling iCloud Drive on and off, but you've already tried that. It could also be that you need to turn off iCloud Drive syncing for all of your devices. Remember, it's not just your devices that are involved here, but there's whatever Apple's cloud thinks is the master. And sometimes you need to kind of shove that down its throat. So if you turn off iCloud Drive syncing for all of your connected devices and then turn it on only for the phone that has the keyboard shortcuts you want, or the MacBook Pro, right, that has them, let that sync, let that do its thing, add something new to the keyboard shortcuts, let that push an update up to the server. That hopefully will get the server to say, this one's the master. Then turn it on the next one and do the same thing. Add a shortcut to that device. Hopefully it'll start doing some cross syncing. Then add a third one, add a shortcut to that one. You can delete all these additional shortcuts once you've got everything happy and done. But a lot of times that's what you need to do, is add a shortcut to the device that's not syncing to sort of force it to play catch up and say, oh yeah, well, I'm here, everything's good. So I know that's not much of an answer, but that's all we got. So I'm going to throw it out there. John, do you have any further thoughts on that one?
I just shake my fist.
Yeah, right. That actually is more productive than any of the things we've mentioned, because at least it makes you feel better.
Will mention that I do believe if you log in through the web to iCloud, there is an option. And I think you're going down the right path, is that I believe there's an option where you could say, okay, anybody who's on my iCloud account, go away.
Right.
And I think you can instruct iCloud to kick everybody off. And sometimes it could be that one or more devices logged into iCloud are doing things that you don't want. So by kicking everybody off, and, you know, sadly, I hate for this to be the answer to solving problems, but sometimes effectively turning it off and on again sometimes fixes the problem. And I think this, in the case of iCloud, is the way to do that, is kick everybody off and then,
yeah, one by one,
it settles down and, you know, and is happy. And then once people log back in, everything is wonderful again.
You hope. So one thing, and I, you know, we've touched on this in previous episodes, and there's actually been a long discussion in our Facebook group at MacGeekGab.com/Facebook about the issue where Wi-Fi networks come back. You tell it, forget this network, and it comes back.
Logan. Yeah. Logan Wi-Fi.
Logan Wi-Fi. Yeah. Well, hang
you
on.
Love Logan. Hang Logan on. Wi-Fi loves you, dude.
Oh, yeah. So here's the thing, though. Somebody pointed this out. On the Mac, Wi-Fi networks are system-wide preferences. So if I choose to log into a Wi-Fi network, another user that logs into that machine will also be logged into that same Wi-Fi network. Makes sense. You know, the computer's there. It should log in. All good. Well, that means that both users on that computer will now have that Wi-Fi network in their preferred list, even though the second user didn't add it intentionally. So part of what happens is these Wi-Fi networks, if, say, my son logs in to Logan Wi-Fi on his phone and we share an iMac at the house, which we do, and we both log into that, well, we're both going to inherit each other's preferred networks lists. And I think that's where some of this comes from. It sounds like, certainly from the people if you look at the group of people that experience this issue and the people that don't, there's a pretty clean divide between those that share a computer and somewhere in their lives and those that don't. And I think that's a big part of it. So, you know, if I want Logan Wi-Fi to go away, I have to convince my entire family to make it go away. And, you know, as much as I like to say I rule with an iron fist, I'm not really convinced that I do. But they all hate that Logan Wi-Fi thing, too. And since I pay for the bandwidth, well, maybe we can make this, you know, we can make this go away together. But it's going to be a family effort.
At least you don't rule with an iron wing.
No, that's what Hector does. Well, she rules with an iron beak. Her wing is quite fragile.
I seem to recall at one point it was an iron wing, but I think it evolved into a yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely an iron beak for Hector D. Bird. So, yeah, yes. All right. Well, we mentioned our Facebook group, of course, and we'd love to see you there. Feedback@MacGeekGab.com is the place where you can go to send us pretty much anything you want.
And where my esteemed colleague said, in case you didn't hear him, is feedback@MacGeekGab.com.
No. That's feedback@MacGeekGab.com, unless you're a premium listener, in which case you can use premium@MacGeekGab.com. If you want to learn more about premium, visit us at MacGeekGab.com. We really appreciate all of you that contribute as part of our premium program, and we would love to have more of you as a member, if, in fact, you are able to do so. If you want to call us, whether or not you are a premium member, 224-888-GEEK is the number. And John, Geek is?
It always been and it always will be 4335.
That's right. Cashfly@CACHEFLY.com provides all the bandwidth to get the show from us to you. And they just started using Varnish, which is pretty cool because we use that here at TMO Towers as well. The podcast marketplace, as we mentioned, includes ProXPN at proxpn.com/MacGeekGab for a free VPN, and then coupon code GAB50 saves you 50% off of their premium offering. Otherworld Computing at maxsales.com, Barebones Software at barebones.com, Squarespace at squarespace.com/MGG, where coupon code MGG saves you 10%. Smile Software at smile@smilesoftware.com/geek. You can learn about the latest deals that they offer via us to you. Gazelle at gazelle.com to sell off all your old stuff so you can buy that new iPad Pro. Casper at casper.com/MGG, where coupon code MGG saves you $50. Free shipping on a great mattress. John, give them something to last the week.
I'm going to give him something because you almost blew it there, buddy. But I'm going to say you pulled through, you made it. You still have your voice, which means that you didn't get caught.
Made up.